Welcome to the Pathfinder Podcast, brought to you by Shillington, where we talk to creators about how they navigated their design careers from the early beginnings up until now, and the twists and turns along the way. I'm Jimmy Muldoon, designer and teacher at Shillington's New York campus. Glad you could join us.
So this morning, we have Olivia, who is a Taiwanese designer and creative director living out of Sydney. She runs her own studio there and also teaches in Shillington. Her work is vibrant, it's organic, it captures your attention and it really draws you in. Olivia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. How's your morning so far?
It's been good. Nowadays, everything's been more relaxed and slow, which is, to be honest, it's actually what I needed from a crazy last year, which when I started my own studio just last year, 2019. And it has been so busy ever since. And now it's just slowly to get more normal, I guess. Like, yeah, getting better time management and more work-life balance. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, that's great. So I just wanted to start off by giving you an opportunity to give us an overview of yourself. So, you know, kind of like where you grew up, was your house a creative household, and how you kind of came to be a designer?
Yeah, so I grew up and I was raised and born in Taiwan. So I lived there all the way until when I was 16. And then I went through a high school exchange program to South Dakota in America. And since then, I've been staying in America from South Dakota, Boston, and then New York for college. And after that, I moved around for a while. So I worked in New York for 2 years after school, and then I moved around to France, to Hong Kong, and now in Australia.
So you've seen a lot of the world.
I've seen enough, I think, but I feel like it's still not a lot. It's so much. Like, I've never been to Africa. I've never been to many places in Europe. So I guess I was fortunate enough that you know, I had the chance to travel around and walk and move around some part of the world. Yes.
Yeah. So you kind of touched on, you know, being born in Taiwan and traveling. Like, what were some of those major differences living in Taiwan to then moving your entire life at the age of 16 to America? What was that like?
Well, first of all, I think I wouldn't do it again if at this age, or 34 now, I'll be too scared to even do anything like this. But when you're 16, when you're 17, I remember all I wanted to do was to get out. I have this mentality of like, I need to get out. There's bigger worlds out there. There's must be different. So it wasn't that hard for me because I was so determined to adapt, to be almost, at the time when I first moved to America, I was so determined to be American, whatever that means, but I was more just eager and excited, and I was young, so you are very brave when you're young. So it wasn't that hard, but the huge difference is really, I remember what it really shook me was when I see how my peers, my American teenage peers express themselves, how they talk, how they present, how they, you know, their fashion sense is so very different from Taiwan, because in Taiwan, speaking up and expressing yourself or questioning your teachers is something that is forbidden. Not forbidden, but it's like very frowned upon, like you don't do it. You really, we were told to just listen, to be humble. We're taking a lot of lessons, but we never really questioned for ourselves. So I think in that way, we really like the skill of expressing your opinions. We like the skill of, I guess, critical thinking, which in America, I think people were really, really big on self-expression. Mm-hmm. And so that left to me was the first difference I noticed when I first moved to America.
Yeah. It's obviously a massive cultural, like as you kind of stated, you know, a massive cultural difference between the two. You know,
yeah.
You're brought up, you know, a certain way of, you know, listening to elders and so forth, and then, you know, in another world, you know, there's people like questioning and asking, like, how did you navigate that going through high school, going through college? Like, was that an uncomfortable lesson to have to learn?
I think what you say about listening to the elder was really funny. It's so true because, you know, in school, we even have to bow to the teachers before every class. Can you imagine before every class starts, all the students have to stand up and then do a 90-degree bow before we proceed? You know, that's just so crazy to think about that in a Western mentality, because there is this hierarchy, this lack of hierarchy, right? Everyone is more equal, which is great because they encourage all the students to think in an equal place as the teachers. And really now we know after a whole, you know, after going through all these educations, we all realize the teachers are not always right. They're not everything. They're just human too. So I think that's something that people in the East still have problem accepting or expressing themselves in equal footing as people who is older than us, mm-hmm. or who is in a position of authority. Mm. But what was your question? I think you said, how do I navigate? I think it was really easy because I think in my nature, I have always been the one who is more outgoing, who is not afraid of speaking my mind, but it just the cultural, right? Like when I was growing up, it wasn't encouraged. So I just remember going to America, I realized, oh, this is great. I can do it. I can be myself. But I also have to shatter a lot of the burden I was piled on while living in Taiwan, right? So I have to remember just forcing myself to not to be too polite. I remember that's a weird thing I talk to myself, like, oh, don't be too polite because you end up just being annoying, you know, like these kind of things. And also reminding myself, oh, I can speak up. I can say something. And let's do something that I struggle to to let go sometimes. But it's definitely getting better now. But I just remember in the beginning, I just have to consciously telling myself to stand up and to express myself.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because obviously that's different from country to country. You kind of touched on before the different locations that you lived in after America. And obviously, you know, you spent a fair bit of time in America. You learn kind of those ways of communication and so on. Did you then kind of have to adjust when you went to France, you know, when you ended up in Australia?
Yes. It's very interesting. It's almost like picking up a new language. Once you have done it once, it's a lot easier to adapt. But I think the first time, the first language you learn, it's going to be the one you embrace the most. And also in America, when I was moving to America, I was very young. It was the time when I'm so eagerly absorbing knowledge and the things around me. So of course, I pick it up very quickly. I adapt very quickly. And the second country that I moved to, which is France, it was a very short period of time because I didn't do it well. I feel like I didn't adapt it as well. And also French being another new language, it was, and I was already I was already in my early 20s. So I was already, I guess, harder for me to adapt at that age. So then France was harder, but then when I moved to Hong Kong after France, because my visa ran out. So I moved to Hong Kong, and it was pretty easy because Hong Kong being a country that you can speak Chinese, Mandarin, you can speak English, and you have no problem. And Hong Kongese people is in a way more similar to Taiwan. So I get a lot of, I can relate to them, I guess, a lot. So it was easier for me to adapt to the living culture in Hong Kong, but it was harder for me to adapt to the working culture in Hong Kong. Working culture in America is the only thing I know because I've never worked in Taiwan. So then the working culture in the East is very different. Again, the authorities and all the things that bothers me when I was in school came back, right? When I was working in Hong Kong. And then it didn't last long. I think I was only in Hong Kong for 2 years. And then now in Australia, and I think this is perfect. And I think it's not hard to adapt to. I think Australia is a very open place. Probably more open than, I don't want to say America, but probably more open than a lot of places in America, not New York. But people are just nicer in a way that's different from American. I think American, everyone expects you to be American or act like American. There's this facade of like, oh, you have to be Americanized. While in Australia, there's more room for you to be different, I guess. You can still keep a lot of your own culture. You don't have to assimilate that much. Mm. It's also because Australia is still a younger country when it comes to, you know, immigrating culture. So I think America, there's already an identity that's been formed, a very strong identity of this American immigrant culture. Well, I think Australia is just new, but it's great because that's why there's so much more possibility when it's new. And it's great because now we see so many different narratives being driven. It's not just one mono narrative nowadays. So then it gives Australia a new chance, a better chance than other countries to do things right, you know? So yeah, I'm really excited about the future of Australian immigrant, yeah, you know, country as a country, yeah, as an immigrant country. Yeah.
So Australia is home for you now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Australia is home for me now. I'm married into an Australian family. So that's the reason I moved to Australia. It's for my husband.
Kind of like going into your work style, you know, how would you describe your work, you know, and how does your personality really kind of play into your work?
It took me a while to find out what's my style. And I think that's actually a good thing. I've been a graphic designer for 10 years. And in the beginning, I was doing as many as I can do, as many different type of work I can find, really. So now eventually, I feel like there is always this style I'm more drawn to, and it's something that's more organic. I definitely like bold and vibrant colors, but I did try to get rid of this trait when I was during my training. I was trying, you know, during your training, everyone is telling you less is more, editing things out. And that was really good, great feedback, and I've done that. But now I'm going back to my more natural instinct, which is using lots of colors. But of course, now after being trained, you have the eye to then, you know, pick out what's enough and what's too much, right? So my natural instinct is, I can see from my artwork back in the days, it's really just very vibrant colors, bold. I like to, I think my style is really adaptable to my clients, but my working style is usually that I want to investigate more. I want to find out more. I want to make this more about a brand. I want to make this about the story and what's the background of a story and why this story is needed to be heard. Like all these kind of things that I do. It's like my distinct working style. But in terms of a graphic design style, yes, it's more vibrant. It's usually more colorful and bold. I tend to say that I adapt a lot for the clients, based on the clients.
So research is like obviously is a huge part of what you do. Like you really kind of like delve in deep into that work before you kind of like touch anything.
Yeah, that's something that's been trained. I was trained in school for that, to always do the research. And also it's for my personal needs too. I'm a very curious person. I want to know more about, and I learned so much from my clients. I want to know more about the projects, the clients, and the products, right? So it's really for me, without the research, without digging into the story, it's hard for me to come up with any ideas, really. I think I can design just for the design sake as well. I can just do something pretty or cool or trendy, which is even worse. But in a way, it will never be more than that. Maybe one poster, two posters looks cool. It goes viral. It went on design blogs, but it's not even coming up with that trendy element or like that graphic design elements. I really need something to inspire me. So I think I need to dig into the stories, because that's what inspires me.
I just want to kind of touch on that a little bit. When you kind of get briefed in from a client, or someone contacts you, and it's all systems go, you're going to be moving ahead with this project. What is your process the same for every client, or does it kind of change depending on the client and what they want and so on?
The beginning, the brand strategy part is more or less very, very similar. I have come up with different stages throughout my, you know, I kind of formulate these stages of getting to know the clients, the first meeting being, you know, like an introduction meeting, and the second meeting, we will talk more about their goals. I really want to know about their goals and their business goals, how much money they want to make, how much money does the product charge, all that stuff, right? And the third one being a brainstorming session with all of the stakeholders in a business, when we all meet together and brainstorm together so everyone's voice is heard. So all this process is more or less the same. Mm. But the design process, I allow myself more room than usual, because when I was working for other company, there was always time limits. There was always, you can only spend this much time on the project. There's always a limit to, you have to go through the stage of getting approvals, and then we don't go back. Once things is being approved by clients, you don't go back, because why would you? It's not good for business. But then for me, when it comes to the design stage, I'm very critical of how much I want to do. And the client, sometimes my standard is higher than the client's. Sometimes the clients will be happy with the work I produce, but then I probably sit on it for a week and didn't like it anymore, or like thinking that it wasn't really that good. And I'm very honest. So I'll open up to the clients, and I will just do it over again for them. And that's something that I just have to do for myself. And so during this stage, and you know, creative process is never a straight line. Sometimes we think we got the answer, but then it didn't come out as good as we think. Then I will always go back to do it. It's always, there is no one formulated process for me when it comes to creative process. It's more like it's very organic, and we adapt when we proceed. I plan a lot of what we're going to do in the future in the calendar, but then that calendar is definitely changeable. And I will tell that to my clients before I start working with them, that it's very organic, because I'm a small team. It's good for me, and I think it's also good for them, because they're also, a lot of them are startups too. So being small is very, very, being small has the advantage of being more agile. And I think that's something I can offer my clients that other bigger companies couldn't.
Yeah, because you know, looking at your work, you know, you've had some clients like festivals down to like yoga studios. Like, is that the kind of clientele that you want to be doing more work for?
Yeah. So I work in so many type of studios and agency and in-house when I was, throughout the 10 years of my career. So throughout this process, I realized I kind of recognize the things I like to do the most, and the type of environment which helps me to succeed the most in what I want to do. And I think, and to me, that's small clients. I really love creating a business with my clients when a startup or when someone who wants to start a business come to me, and then we were kind of drafting out this brand from naming to even brand strategy to business strategy. I really love this part of my process, and creating something from zero to everything is, I think it's every designer's dream, right? It's very rewarding. So in that sense, I really love doing startups because I feel like it's almost my own business too. You know, for 3 months of my life, I was part of the co-founder of the business almost. And then, but I was able to also just let go and move on to the next project. That's really fun to me. So small studios is something, I mean, small studio environment is something that works for me. And then small clients, startup clients is something that works for me too. So I don't see myself expanding anytime soon, just because I don't want to just expand for the expanding sake. I kind of want to do something that makes me happy. And that's what's more rewarding than money, really.
Yeah. How has your culture really influenced the way that you design today?
That's a really good question. Moving around so many countries, I started to realize how an environment really, really affects you. And then at first, when I was moving out of Taiwan, I was determined that, oh, there's nothing, Taiwan didn't make me, you know, there's nothing in there for me. But then when I get older and I, as a retrospect, you go back to think about all the things that have influenced you. And I feel like Taiwan has been a big part of me. I just didn't, you know, I wasn't wise enough. I wasn't mature enough to appreciate it. Taiwan is a very eclectic place. We have lots of culture kind of all merging together, influences from China, Japan, America, and now Korea. And then if you walk on the street, it's very organic. It's never like a gridded system. It's not like New York. It's not like Japan. Everything is a bit messy and unplanned, and it just, you know, building on top of the another buildings. It's very interesting. It's very, very fun. It's almost like a scene in Ghost in the Shell, I think. But just, it's a lot, in a sense, it's very, very similar to Hong Kong, but it's also more chill in Hong Kong. It's very relaxing. In that sense, it's probably more like Bangkok or Thailand. You know, it's just like, there's so many different elements playing around in Taiwan. And so I think to me, it really influenced in the way I work. I'm not a professionalist. And I think it's very interesting when you see designers that they are not professionalists. I'm not a professionalist. I like to let things evolve in a more organic way. I don't like to plan everything. And in my work, I like to more experiment sometimes. I don't think there's a certain set of rules that's right or wrong when it comes to design, right? And so I think that comes from my upbringing and the influence from Taiwan. It's a very vibrant city. It's very loud, it's very, very noisy, but it's also, it also has its beauty. It has in it, you know, it might seem ugly at first glance, but then you find, oh, it's actually really beautiful, or like it's ugly in a beautiful way. Yeah, I don't know how to explain it, but I think that really influenced me and in how I design, and the things I'm naturally drawn toward. I'm drawn toward naturally to these bold colors, and I think it's also because of the graphic language that's been surrounding in Taiwan, in the city in Taiwan.
Mm. You kind of studied in New York, and you received your bachelor's degree at Pratt. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, what you studied?
Mm-hmm. So Pratt is a 4 years program, art school. And it's I studied in Pratt in undergrad, so it's in Brooklyn. So we do have a campus in Brooklyn where everyone lived on campus. It was really interesting because the first year of school is really for foundational years, which means everyone, no matter which degree you signed up for, you will learn the fundamental of arts. So you do painting, you do sculpture, you do some filmmaking, very, very basic and fundamental level. You also learn a lot about, art history. So in that first year, not touching any computers was amazing. And really just like, I learned so much more in terms of color when I was doing oil painting than Photoshop, right? So like, it's very interesting to combine these traditional skills of in art, and then later on the second year and the third year, you starting to evolve more. You start to get involved more in a computer, in a graph design computer aspect. What really affected me, I think, is when I was 4 years going through 4 years degree. After the foundation years, I still continue to take oil paintings as an elective. And also, it's very interesting. And I think for me that there is a lot of more craft, a lot of like hand-drawn approach from my work. It's probably because I wasn't afraid to, first approach any project with just a pen and pencil or a brush to see what I can come up with, I wasn't afraid of using the traditional tools. I think nowadays a lot of students are so used to computers and they are very afraid of not using the computers. Even now people draw in, on their iPad in Procreate. I think we are very prone to, there is always a Command Z button. There's always a return. People are afraid of making mistakes because they're so used to computer. And I think for me, not losing that confidence in using traditional tools is amazing because they also, if I made a mistake, just do another one, just redo it. And there is something's going to come up from that. And that's something that we don't have the chance to explore when you are just using computers.
Yeah, 100%. Do you pull out the paint still, or do you pull out, the clay and just start, experimenting to see kind of what happens?
Yeah, if I feel like the brief is calling for it, definitely. I mean, even before that, for every brief, I would start sketching on my sketchbook, right? To quickly explore ideas. But then if this brief, I feel like this brief deserves, this brief needs some sort of handcrafted elements, then definitely I will explore, collaging, maybe some sculpture. One of the projects I used sculpting. And at first it was just for fun, but it eventually become better than anything I produced on the computer. So I decided let's just use that. And then a lot of brush. I do a lot of hand brushing, brush on paper, inks on paper. So yeah, if I feel like the brief calls for that, I would definitely explore that part.
Yeah. Do you find yourself going back to the artists, the architecture, architects that you were looking at when you were studying as inspiration for projects?
Definitely. I think even if I don't have any project on, as a designer, we really have to get ourselves out there, getting influenced by anything outside of graphic design. It can be music, it can be movies. And for a period of time, movies really inspire me. Movies are amazing, actually. And then filmmaking, go to the museum, painting. That's the type of inspiration you are not going to get on internet. The problem with getting inspiration on internet, and I've done that before, I'm also guilty of that, is it's so easy to just take people's work. It's so easy to get heavily inspired by what other graph designer has done. So you it's like they already digested and then produce a work, and then you are redigesting whatever they have digested. I don't know if it makes sense, but so it's never going to be fresh because it's like food being processed many times, right? But if you go to a museum, if you go to the nature, Australia has amazing nature's plants and, you know, the bush and everything. But all that stuff hasn't been digested. So if you take those inspiration directly from the source, directly from the artwork, then whatever you produce is going to be more refreshing, definitely. Mm-hmm. And so I think I do that a lot too. And thank you for reminding me this again. You know, we can go back to the rabbit hole of internet so easily. And, you know, with COVID, you just feel like you don't want to go out, but it's true. It's so important to go out there. It's so important to just go to a museum and get influence from artwork. Have some books, you know, some art books, sculpture books, architecture books. You should never limit your interest to just graphic design, because then your work will be very, very limiting as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there's, you know, during this time, we want everyone to stay safe, but there's lots of museums that are doing virtual tours as well. So if you are caught at home, you know, loads of museums here in New York, and I'm sure across the globe are putting on these things. So in this digital age, we still have access to, you know, museums, you know, films, like old films, like the type and the way they shoot things and the colors, you know. It's still there at our fingertips.
And I feel like we have more access now with this COVID thing, because, like, you know, back in the days, I wouldn't be able to go to a museum in New York, because it's in New York and I'm in Australia, but now I can actually go online and then, you know, visit MoMA. New York has the best museum, by the way. It's like, I'm very jealous of that. Yeah, so in a way, we probably have more assets and a lot of more free assets. Mm. It's probably a great way for us to, I guess, democratize design. You know, design has always been something that's very costly. Studying design, being a designer, is very risky financially. So a lot of people didn't have the chance to do that. But now I think it's probably a good way for us to find out a way so then everyone can access the things, the resource that, you know, a middle class person can access as well. So,
yeah, definitely. And I think what you touched on before, like the digesting of things, you know, like it's not a quick pin, you know, and it's on another board. It's, you know, really like taking back and digesting that artwork, digesting that film, that music, that the photography. You know, I've got some photography books here at home like just bodegas, you know, and dry cleaning, like the old like 50s, 40s to 60s, even 70s, like typography of like how type work together, the deli and the newsagent and the smoke shop and all these things. And it's so inspiring, but it's just digesting those things really slowly. I think what you talk about there is a really great thing to kind of like think about in such a fast paced digital age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. What would you say is the key difference in the style of education that you went through versus the Shillington boot camp style that you teach?
Well, I think we shouldn't compare the Shillington bootcamp style with, you know, 4 years of art degrees, right? It's for different customers. It's for different target audience. It's different business in totally. You know, when you go to a 4 years degree art school, it's for people who just graduate high school. It's for people who is probably haven't seen the world per se. It's like a blank canvas and you're just absorbing. You're like a sponge. You need to get to learn how to think. You have to get to learn the way of life. While for Shillington, a lot of our students have already been through that education, whether it's in another degree they already took, or it's in, you know, maybe in life. They already have a career, they already have been working. So a lot of them has resource of tons and tons of life resource more than me, or life experience more than me. That's something that you cannot get from an art school. It's just from life, right? And then, and so I think for them to go back to art school just because they want to be a graphic designer, it's not fair because they already learn a lot. They already know how to think. So for Shirlington, it's kind of like we're helping them, giving them the tools to then change their life course a little bit. And I think what's great about Shirlington is it's definitely condensed, yes, but everything you need to learn is really there. And we also teach you design thinking. We not just teach you the programs. It's not like a computer. It's not like it's not like something you learn on the computer on the internet. It's more than that because we teach you the design thinking, the critique. We train your eyes as much as training your skills, right? And I think that's the formula that Shirlington provided was definitely been tested, and it has definitely been designed. It's like if you want to design a design course, what will you do? This is like, it's amazing because at first, of course, I mean, coming from a 4 years degree, I have my hesitation as well. But while I'm going through being introduced to the course, teaching the course, I started to realize, wow, it touched on so much more than the 4 years degree wouldn't have the chance to, because also when you have 4 years to learn something, you kind of just tend to be very relaxed and lazy, right? Just like, oh, I have 4 years. When a student at Shirlington has 3 months or a year to learn something, it's a completely different attitude.
Yeah, you're really right. And it's always interesting, you touched on it really well, where people bring in, you know, in the Shirlington course, people have seen life. They've had other careers or multiple careers. It's really interesting to see them bring that in to graphic design, you know, the way mm-hmm. they thought about, you know, the people that we come across on a day-to-day have got so many different backgrounds, but they're still able to kind of pull in kind of a way of thinking of that role that they, the job that they had, you know, if it was an engineer or, you know, a financial banker or a teacher or, you know, a nurse or whoever it is, like their skill sets that they have got and they've learned that they can bring into design. And design is just like, yeah, like, bring all the experiences that you've got, we'll take them all.
That's the amazing part about graphic design. It's really the best job for everyone to contribute a little bit of their personality. Yeah. Everything you're going through personally, you can take it into your design work. I think that's amazing. It's like very similar to art in that sense. But a lot of my students are self-conscious about their background and say, oh, I didn't graduate from like the 4 year art, like any art schools. I didn't study art. I don't know how to draw. It's like they don't understand how much more assets they have than other students who just graduated from a art school. Whatever they have learned through life, they are all these amazing, precious assets that's going to make them more employable, make them producing more interest in art.
Yeah, definitely. Was design always something that you wanted to do when you were younger?
It has always been something with art, I think. I went through many phases, but once I picked graphic design, I was pretty sure it was graphic design. But it has always been something that's something to do with art.
Mm. Yeah. I saw on your old website, like a lot of photography of you, like really kind of delving into art, and you know, your studio has a lot of art in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. There's no, not necessarily typography posters or Joseph Muir Brockman, you know, all this stuff, but like there's art, and there's you working on, you know, kind of sculptures, which is a really great skill, you know, and passion to kind of bring in into design. And as we said before, you know, design welcomes all of those things and wants to utilize them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you find the balance between teaching and running your own studio?
Yeah, people always ask me, how do I find work-life balance? I'm not a great person to ask that for because I don't have no work-life balance. But to be honest, if you really love your job, like it's something I would do. Sometimes I will work on a Sunday and I'm like, oh, everyone's like, this is Sunday, why am I working? But then I think about, okay, this is probably what I would do as a habit anyway. So, you know, just it's my habit, it's my hobby, and then I just keep, I really love what I do. In terms of teaching, I don't think I would teach if I was still working full-time for a studio or for agency. But because now I run my own studio, I have more flexibility in my schedule. So teaching to me is not a big deal. I have the time to teach, and then I can also organize, you know, if I teach late, then next morning I probably would just sleep in a little bit more. You know, like these kind of things is something that's amazing, that coming from owning your own business is the freedom, right? You have the, you know, I think what's really crazy about working in a studio or agency before is we all have to wake up the same time. We have lunch the same time, probably the same lunch. And then we leave at the same time. We probably go to the bathroom at the same time. It's so crazy that you don't live like that. And humans is not happy. I feel like as human beings, we are not the most happy when every aspect of our life is being controlled. Mm. You know, you don't have time. Not everyone is a morning person, and it's fine, right? So then, so I just feel like when it comes to work-life balance, everyone had to find what's important for them and what works for them. But what works for me is I do love my job. I do love working for myself, and I love the students. I love teaching. I feel like teaching really, sometimes when I'm really tired from my work and I go to the classroom, immediately I get re-energized because it's when you see the passion in the student's eye, it really reminds me of why I decided to be a designer. The people, I think I learned a lot more from my students as well, just because, you know, going from the teacher, the students have their whole life of experience. Some of them are older than me or younger than me, but they all have, we all from different walk of life. And then that for me is very exciting to learn from them. So it really rejuvenized, it re-energized me. In that sense, teaching is now, yeah, it's something that's really fun for me.
Yeah. Because even if you're doing part-time, you know, these people more than likely have jobs. So they're working this day job and then they leave and then they come to class. Like that shows a huge commitment from a teacher, you know, to see that and go, okay, there is a class, two classes for a class full of individuals that are wanting to change their life. They want to do something new and they're saying, I trust you to teach me the way of design. It's a really inspiring thing as a teacher, and that, as you said, you know, it gives you this energy.
Yes, it's so inspiring. And sometimes I'll be like, how can they do that? Like, they work full times. They don't have a studio like me. So they probably wake up at 6, you know, working full time and then come back to learn more. Mm-hmm. And then, but some of my students will come to me and say, oh my God, this is what I expect the most. This is what excites me the most about my week. And I just say, oh my God, this is such an honor that I'm part of that. I'm part of like the most exciting thing in their work week. So that's really amazing to see that when I see that from my students. And it's true, design is so much fun. Like, our job is so much fun. People spend eight hours a day working on an Excel sheet, you know. So like our life, our job, no matter how boring the job is, it's always much more fun than other jobs. So so my students also remind me of that, right? They talk about their job, they complain about their job. It's like, oh my God, I'm so happy and I'm here learning to be a graphic designer. So yeah, it's really great to have that reminder as a designer. After, you know, 10 years of practicing design, or even 5 years, a lot of time we get really burned out, or like we question our original passion, but it's always going to be there. That's why we decided to, you know, be a graphic designer.
Yeah, 100%. What motivated you in the first place to become a teacher at Shillington?
As my career progressed, I've been, helping a lot of the, or actually manage a lot of the junior designers in my job before. And I noticed that I love teaching and sharing ideas with younger designers. I love helping people come up with their own ideas. The way I manage my junior designers is very similar to the way I teach. Is a lot of time I don't want to give them an idea. I don't want to spoon feed them an idea. I kind of want to ask the right question, give them the right reference, so they come up with their own idea, but it's better than the idea I could have come up with. And that's something I really loved doing when I was working in a big agency. And that's why I started to think about, okay, well, can I be a teacher? Like this, maybe there's something. I know I will always be a good teacher because I love teaching. Even when I was young, I like to play teacher all the time, you know, like, so I think it's in my nature. I'm very nourishing type of person. So then I always know that teacher will be, you know, everyone asks me, oh, if I'm not a graphic designer, what will I do? I always think, oh, I'll be a teacher maybe, or, you know, a teacher. So then, so having Shillington as a platform was amazing because there's a reason Shillington recruit working designers as their teachers instead of someone who's professors who's been teaching, you know, for 20 years. Design is a very, it's very fast environment. It's always growing. It's always changing. And if you're not in the industry for more than 1 year or 2 years, you already feel like left behind. You feel like you're left behind. So in a sense, all of our teachers are working designers. We're in the scene. We know what's going on. We know what's trendy. We know what's the direction of design that's going. We know the technology. So that's something that's really amazing about Shillington, that it gave us this platform. It's quite easy to become a Shillington teacher in the sense that there's no academic bureaucracy behind it yet. And the program is always changing too. Our teaching materials is always changing. When we feel like this presentation is outdated, we change it immediately, even though it's only one year or 2 years old, you know? So that's what's amazing about Shillington. It progresses at the same pace as the design industry. So yeah. So I think that's what motivated me to be a teacher.
Yeah, that's great. We kind of touched on you kind of like living and working in a number of different countries and environments. Like, you know, you've worked in New York, Hong Kong, you know, Melbourne, Sydney, and spent time in France. Like, how has each city, you know, each city has its own, you know, design aesthetics, design methods, culture. How have they kind of influenced you as a designer?
I think design is more like a social study. It's almost like an anthropology. You know, it's man-made. It's man-made culture. So the environment really determines a lot of what type of design people are more drawn to. So what really teach me? What really open my eyes while I was working and living in other cities is I see how different people think and how there's so many different types of style people will praise upon, right? People in maybe people in Hong Kong always love that super crafty, amazing layout, typography. And then people in New York really like something bold, new, shiny. Something different. So, and every city has its own taste, and they might see this design better than other design, but it's really just taste. And then I think going through so many cities with so many different tastes, when all designers in each city always have like their, you know, this designer is the best, blah, blah, blah. It really helps me understand that to be more confident in my own style. Like, because if my style is not perceived well in this city, it doesn't mean it's not going to be perceived better in another city. So I think that it gives me more or less just more confidence in my work, in my own personal style, being more confident in the decision making of, okay, this is what I'm, you know, I'm going to stay true to myself. I'm going to do this. You know, when I was in Melbourne, everything's very, very experimental, which is fun. When I was in Sydney, everything tends to be more minimal. I feel like I didn't limit myself to the style of the designers around me. I'm more just getting more confidence in being true to my style and knowing that it's okay because every style is different. Every city has different style. And really what I learned more from all the cities is just probably this, realizing this truth that it's taste, different taste, and everyone perceives things differently.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. What made you transition into freelance, running your own studio?
Yeah, so as soon as I graduated art school, as soon as I got my first full-time job, I've always been freelancing on the side. It happens usually when I'm not happy with my full-time job, creatively happy, right? But I need a job to survive, so I'll take the job, but then I'll do freelance on the side. And that's been what's been the creative fruit for me. It's been fun for me. It gives me the energy to be a creative. It helps me, it prevents me from being burned out from my day job. So I've been doing that throughout, you know, the whole time, on and off. If I have more, if my day job is more challenging, it's more fun, then I probably take less freelance. So it has just been a habit. I just keep doing that. I'm always working. I remember working so hard when I was young. I will work a 4-day job and then come back to do freelance and don't sleep until 3 or 4 a.m. But I can't do this anymore. It's so crazy because I think about how hard I work. And then so now, in comparison, the way I work now is not that hard. But that really helps me so much by doing freelance on the side. I learned a lot more in a direct, you know, interaction with the clients, what the clients want. I learned to associate myself from the clients, to think of them, to empathize them, right? To think of them from their point of view, and that makes sense in the design. So it's not just as a junior designer in an agency, you probably don't have a lot of connection with the clients. Your art director, your creative director probably just tell you, this is what I'm looking for, and this is a solution we think we can come up with. And now you come up with it, right? It's very different from being a freelancer. You're talking to the clients directly. You find out what's their goal, what's their problem. You're going through this exploration with them. And that part of freelancing is amazing. So I've been doing that, you know, on and off for 10 years, for 9 years. And then eventually I get more and more freelance clients. And so I started to, you know, work 4 days a week in my full-time job instead of 5 days, and then probably later on 3 days a week instead of 5 days, and then I had to quit altogether. But then I was still doing freelancing for, you know, for a big agency. So I was still doing 3 days a week in a freelancing in a big agency, not as a full-time. But then 3 days. So I'll do 3 days in the agency and 3 days on my own, and then eventually it just naturally progress to doing my own things. So then at one point I just decided to set up the whole company, set up an ABN, set up a business. I self-taught a lot about the business side of design. And now just 100% Studio Chin Chin is my income. So it's great. It's been a slow transition, but I think it's a good decision for me because I can never just do the jump. Mm-hmm. It's more logical to do this slowly.
Yeah, it sounds like you kind of had a plan, you know, and you're, you know, taking on work and then just slowly limiting, you know, the hours that you're spending at an agency rather than just ripping the Band-Aid off, you're really kind of setting for success, because to then kind of go rogue all of a sudden, going, okay, so where are these clients coming from, sitting by the phone? You know, you really set yourself up for success in that way. What are some of the lessons that you wish someone had kind of taught you before going freelance?
I think all of the lessons about business, maybe the first biggest advice is get a really good accountant. Talk to an accountant before you even start your business, but I didn't do that. So when I have to go to an accountant, you know, there's so much things to fix. But I guess I really wish there would be a business course in the design school and in the art school, how to do your contract, how to do your proposal, legal rights, copyrights, all that stuff, right? I wish someone could have told me that more when I was starting, but you learn the most from experience. And once you start to take on your own clients, you're starting to figure out, you're starting to problem shoot, you're starting to realize, oh, that there's a problem in my process, there's issues in this, and then you learn from your mistake. So that has been great. But I guess before, if anyone wants to start their own design business nowadays, if they come to me, I will tell them to do it slowly, really, because you don't want to be desperate for money. That's something that's very dangerous for a designer. When you become desperate for money, the clients know you're desperate. They can smell it. So all the bad clients will just come to you when you're desperate. It's so funny. It's when you learn to say no, when you're in a good position to say no, I don't want to take on this project, there's a lot of powers and, you know, and positivity coming to you. And it's really not good for designers to be desperate. What I would advise the young designers who want to be a freelancer is, if you are needing the money, don't get the money from taking really bad jobs in graphic design. Probably be a barista or wait tables, or like do anything to get the money. But when it comes to design, don't just take jobs because you need the money.
I think you're right, because there's this like desperation and stress and anxiety. And I think as creatives, that's a really big like blockage for creative flow. You know, it's a roadblock. Like when you're stressed and anxious about money, how do you free your mind to problem solve creatively? We are not our best selves creatively when we're carrying that. So I think that's, really great advice. And even in the freelancing, like charging people, like how long did it take you to kind of figure out, you know, it's going to take me this amount of time to do, you know, the brand strategy, it's going to take me this amount of time for the brainstorming, the, you know, the development, the rollout, how do I charge for that?
I learned from experience, but I don't charge for times, because again, my creative process doesn't, I think what makes my design amazing is not because how much time I put in it. Mm-hmm. And really, I think the client shouldn't care about the times. They should just care about if I deliver or not. So I don't charge based on times. And there's this really funny story. When I first graduated, I get my first freelance job. In New York, and then I was so timid and scared, so I charged $300 for the whole branding job. And then one of my classmates who also just graduated asked me, hey, how much did you charge for your first freelance job? And I said $300. And then she was also approached by a client, so she's also thinking about taking on her first freelance job. And then she heard me, so, oh, $300, okay. And then the next time I asked her, oh, so how much did you charge for your freelance job? And she said $3,000. And I was like, oh my God. She just put a zero behind it. And then, but she ended up having the best project. It was so good. And then the clients were trusting in her. the clients still, she still get a job, and it's, the clients really respect her. It's and then to me, just like, wow, it's really more about how much you feel confident to charge rather than like how much you think you need to survive to charge, or like how much you think you're spend in this job. Because I don't calculate the hours I put in the projects. That's probably a bad advice, I don't know. But I don't calculate the hours I put in the project. I'm always thinking about if I've done it, if I've achieved that or not, if I've finished, if I've done it, something I would be proud of or not, right? So, and then I charge accordingly, to be honest. I charge accordingly to how much I think the clients will have in terms of revenue, if they're big or not, but I always charge flat rate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I'm constantly, I have a new, you know, I have rules, I have a standard in terms of, oh, this is the lowest. If the clients have absolutely very little budget, but I really want to work for them, how low I would go. I do have a numbers in mind, but the numbers is also going up every year, because each year I feel like I can provide more, I'm more experienced. There is less risk for the clients to hire me now, because I have learned more from to risk manage in terms of printing, in terms of branding, in terms of copyright, right? So these kind of things that is how I determine how I charge, but it's really not about the hours. And I couldn't tell you how you should charge, because it should be how confident you feel to charge a amount of money. And yeah, it's
down to experience as well. And
yeah,
you know, you just don't want to lowball yourself and then spend, you know, 2 weeks doing something for $300. You know, you need to value yourself and your time and your craft. And then in saying that, there's a respect for the industry itself. You know what I mean? Like, you got to keep the value of design high for the fellow designers that are alongside you. So there's, you know, it all comes with, you know, with experience and how you navigate that. You know, do you have any advice for people that are early on in their design career?
If you are young and you have the luxury of time, I would say try to work in an agency, try to work in different studios, try to work for others first. I learned so much from working with other people. It's not just a business skill, but also in, you know, like the design skill. I learned the most in Photoshop in one job. I still remember, right? So if you have the luxury of time, and you're still young, totally do that. You're going to learn so much from and working with different type of studios, mm-hmm. Figure out what works for you. And what kind of, what type of clients that works for you. Right. So I would say that's probably my biggest advice. My other advice is there's always something to learn in each job. Even if you hate your day job, it's not what you think a creative designer should be doing. It doesn't matter. You're going to learn something from it. I always feel like I can learn something from each job. Sometimes when I'm doing the proposal, or I remember having an employer who does a lot of the corporate design. So I was working a lot in the corporate design, banking, finance, which to me was not fun, but I was prepping all the proposal, prepping all the documents. I started to learn how they do their contracting. I learned how big agency do their proposal. So now a lot of from all this experience, now when I run my own studio, I know what type of proposal the clients is going to be getting, right? So then how do I compete with that? So then that's something you can learn from a boring job per se, right? But then I believe there's never a boring job, but if you really hate the job, don't stay longer than a year. Just leave. After a year, just leave. You're always going to find better jobs. But again, I don't think there is a time in waste, I guess, time in vain. You're always going to learn something from each job, and you just have to find the things to learn. what are these companies doing the most? Maybe it's not super creative, but they are doing the most in securing that project, so getting the clients, then learn from that. Mm. If you want to eventually run your own business.
Mm. Yeah, really you can learn, I think, from those tasks that are mundane. And I think even after learning from that skill set, that repetition, or even just like when you do get that next role, it's like, oh, there's an appreciation that comes with it as well. And I think people want to work with designers that are appreciative and want to learn and want to grow and be hungry. I think hunger is a really great attribute to have as a young designer.
Yeah, I would say as a young designer, you should have more confidence in yourself, yes, but never have, don't ever have an ego. And you know, once you have an ego, you stop learning and it's gonna, you're gonna be kicked out very, very, very soon when you have an ego. And also when you stop learning, you're gonna be left behind very, very soon.
Yeah, exactly right. Where can people find your work?
Actually, my website is just live now. My new website is Studio Chen Chen, C-H-E-N-C-H-E-N, studiochenchen.com. And my Instagram is at Studio Chen Chen.
Perfect. There we go. So we'll get people over there to check out all of your incredible work. Olivia, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jimmy.
We really appreciate all of your insights and your advice and your guidance. So, thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much.
No worries.
The Pathfinder podcast has been brought to you by Shillington, the original graphic design bootcamp. To learn more about the podcast and Shillington, click the link in the bio. Show your support by subscribing and rating us on your preferred podcast platform. Original music composed and performed by Menakshi. Thanks for listening.